From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Informative and engaging.
Rick Munn.
Rick Munn on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, informative and engaging. Those are not two words I would use to describe myself. However, those are two words that TNT thought fit to ascribe to me 2 years and 3 months ago, and they've stuck. So maybe, I don't know, I'm informative, engaging. Maybe I'm going to regret what I'm about to say, but if you have two alternative words that you would use to describe me, leave them in the live chat and I might read them out. And don't be rude and don't be particularly nasty. You know, two words to describe good old Ricky Munn. Go for it. Knock yourselves out in the live chat at tntradio.live. And who knows, we might get a special sweeper made out with the most abusive descriptions of yours truly. But it's all good. Listen, doesn't really matter what people say about me. I couldn't care less. Normally speaking, my approach to life is that if I value your opinion and you say something really nasty about me, I might take it a little bit to heart. Okay, but there's very few people out there that I know, period. And the people that I know whose opinion I value, which reduces the pool down even further. So say what you want. It really doesn't matter. Is this the face of concern? I think not. But anyway, it's Tuesday, the 26th of March. I have to squint now because I'm old. Squint. And I don't want to wear my glasses in case the light reflects off them. Anyway, it's Tuesday, the 26th of March, 2024. This is TNT, locked and loaded. We've got a lot on today, as I'm sure you can imagine, over the 2 hours. In this first hour, I'm going to be talking with Gemma Cooper, of course, Luke Andreski, who is an author and also the co-founder of ethicalrenewal.org. I'm going to be talking with him, and then Basil Valentine to round off the first hour. In the second hour, I'm going to be talking to Phil Zimmerman, who is a comedian, an actor, and also a political commentator. And we're going to be really digging into the Assange verdict that was, well, it's due in about 20 minutes' time. So we'll go into that in more depth as we have more breaking news on that in the second hour. And then Stephen Kelly, my sparring partner from Sydney in Australia, will be jumping in the ring with me again to round off the show today. So we still have all that ahead of us. Plenty to discuss, plenty to get into. Leave your thoughts, comments, and opinions in the live chat on tntradio.live or drop me an email, rickmunn@tntradio.live. And stay tuned. Gemma Cooper, our news correspondent, is incoming to discuss the latest breaking news here in the UK, only on TNT. Today's
keeping the commitment 24/7.
I come to you for facts. I really appreciate what you and your team do.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Good morning, good morning, good morning, Gemma Cooper. How are you this fine, beautiful Tuesday morning?
Yes, I'm fine, Rick. I'm waiting like you for the verdict on Assange, whether he can appeal his extradition. And that'll be another hearing if it's a yes. So be further work to be done, but it will be a victory for journalism, certainly, and a victory for the campaigners that are gathering outside the High Court now, not least his wife, Stella, who I think has behaved in a stellar fashion, forgive the pun. But, you know, it's not just a campaign about press freedom and journalistic freedom. It's her husband. So it must be taking a tremendous toll on her, I wouldn't wager.
I'm sure it is. Reverse slightly, there was a story that you brought up yesterday. There's been more came out after, just doing a little bit of follow-up before we get into those headlines. It was to do with the cancer statistics for 18 to 49-year-olds. It was particularly being reported in Ireland. Strange, there seems to be, over the last 24 to 48 hours, Gemma, an awful lot of stories where politicians are starting to show concern over these statistics, rightly so. There's a huge spike in cancers among our young people, and we absolutely need to get to the bottom of it and address that issue. But it's strange that they seem to be ascribing it to just about everything, except, of course, the global vaccine campaign that was launched upon us around about 3 to 4 years ago. Now, aside from the fact that you could say, well, it wasn't that, some people could say, well, at least you have to factor that in as being at least a possibility that you can then discount. But it seems to be this is not even being factored in as a possibility. So there was a piece that was published yesterday in the Daily Mail to say, despite years of research, researchers are baffled as to what is behind the problem of cancer rates spiking amongst our youngsters. So alarm over mystery cancer epidemic striking the under 50s. And then, of course, they use Kate Middleton as an example, saying a Santa scramble to find the cause of startling increase. And again, set aside anything you may feel about it's caused by the jabs, which, let's face it, could well be playing a huge part in this. But at least you've got to factor that in. But I don't see any discussion of that in either the mainstream media or from our politicians. They're acknowledging that there's a spike. They're acknowledging that it's terrible. They're acknowledging that they need to find the root cause, but they're completely discounting one of the biggest possible root causes out there.
Absolutely. I saw that story myself. I just discussed it very briefly with David Curtin an hour before coming on air with you. And he said the same thing. You know, scientists around the world are baffled, just can't put their finger on the reason why. And he said, well, I think we all know the reason why, just as you're alluding to here. What is interesting is we're seeing these headlines now, this epidemic in cancer under the age of 50, or young people. We weren't hearing that 4 years ago. There were no headlines 4 years ago saying there's an epidemic of cancer in young people. There were no headlines 4 years ago saying there was a record number of young people dying of heart attacks and strokes. Now, that either means it's willful blindness by the media not reporting health stories properly, but they're such big headlines that you can't see that they would be ignored if they existed, which they didn't 4 years ago. So look at that piece of evidence in itself. We were not seeing those types of headlines. We were not seeing those many deaths. We were not seeing young people collapsing on football pitches and in athletics and dying suddenly. Those headlines didn't exist. They do now. So that's, you know, another corroborative piece of evidence which gives strength to that argument. And the very fact it's being so ignored, we're not going to look at the jabs. That's nothing to see. Well, why not? Why not? And why be so vocal in the fact you just can't put your finger on it? It just doesn't make any sense at all, scientifically or journalistically, in terms of those headlines and the way those stories are presented. So I think we at TNT can draw our own conclusions from that one.
I just am stunned at the fact that it's not even being factored in as a possibility that it could be the mass global rollout of this injection. And there was one person, I'm not going to name her in particular, in Northern Ireland yesterday. Unfortunately, her husband is suffering from a cancer at the moment. And she was commenting on this as well. And again, head scratching going on. I can't understand what it could possibly be. And again, whether or not you take that line of belief or not, whether or not it is linked to these injections, at the very, very least, Gemma, as a scientific investigation, a proper one, you have to at least factor that in. And that is not even being factored in at the moment. So anyway, that's just a follow-up from what we were talking about yesterday. I think we're going to see a lot more momentum in this in the press over the next few weeks and months. And unfortunately, it's going to be linked to more incidences of cancer among our young people. So other headlines breaking this morning. We touched on the Assange business. Of course, we're going to go into that in more detail in the second hour. What else have you got for us today?
The Home Office, I discussed this one actually with David Curtin too. The Home Office has launched an investigation today after reports that two brothers who were at the Hamas attacks on October the 7th, they were on their way to the UK. They were landing in Manchester Airport and they were stopped by Border Patrol because they had Israeli passports and given quite a grilling, which the Jewish Representative Council of the UK said was anti-Semitic. And James Cleverly this morning has said he is absolutely looking into that. But also what's interesting is that the cost of living crisis does continue to bite ahead of what's called annual price hike day next week, which is April the 1st, coincidentally, possibly April Fool's Day, that there's a whole raft of services that are set to go up in the UK. And also the hospitality industry is really suffering now as a result of the fact no one's got any money. The chain Revolution, formerly Vodka Revolution, that also owns the bars Revolution de Cuba, has announced that it's looking to close a quarter of its venues, lay off hundreds and hundreds of people because its profits are absolutely slumping, its share price is slumping because young people just aren't going out. They haven't got the money. The cost of living is biting. I wonder how many more hospitality venues in the UK we will see go down the pan. But in terms of the cost of living, there are huge areas where price hikes will really bite into millions and millions of people in the UK pockets. For example, British Telecom, EE, Plusnet, Vodafone are all going to be charged 4% more for services. Virgin Media and O2 for their broadband and their cable, they will charge nearly 10% more. Sky TV and the Sky broadband nearly 7% more. And also we have to look at council tax. Is going up by 5% uniformly across the country, and even more in the areas where councils have gone bankrupt. So, for example, Birmingham, if you live in Birmingham, which millions of people do, your council tax will go up by 21% next week. Luckily, if you live in Scotland, it's been frozen. But parts of Wales, depending on where you live, could go up anywhere between 3 and 21%. Which is council tax rises. Of course, lots of things are going up as well. The price of stamps, which we've talked about a lot on here, you, me and Natalie, when she was part of this show, used to talk about that. £1.35 for a first class stamp as of next week. Car tax is going up. Train fares are going up. Water bills are going up. And if you rent social housing in the UK, your rent is going up as well. Now, a few other things are going up in line with inflation to kind of offset this. You know, pensions and benefits are going up and the minimum wage is going up. But what's not going up, Rick, in the UK are wages themselves, actual wages paid by corporations to employees. They haven't gone up. Really, no one's had a real price wage increase for years now. So the cost of living, absolutely everyone's going to feel it next week in their pockets. Another hospitality chain is saying, it looks like we're not going to survive unless we sell and lay off hundreds of people. Not a great end to one financial year as we go into the next financial year. I do find it funny. National Price Hike Day is April Fool's Day.
National Price Hike Day, yeah. I'm surprised they don't turn it into National Price Hike Month. You know, we've got Pride Month, and we've got Black History Month. I'm surprised we don't have National Price Hike Month. The government are missing out on a big trick where they just keep bumping the prices up for 30 to 31 days. Solid. Interesting, you mentioned a few names there. I've been getting a few. I don't get a lot of posts here, but when I do get posts, it's usually somebody demanding money from me or sending me a nasty mail. So I got one through from Virgin this week about my internet connection. It's going to be increased this year by and they charge a RPI plus a percentage, so it's going up by about 6 or 7%. I don't know what it is. Tesco Mobile is another one. They're writing out telling people that they're jacking up their prices. You mentioned insurance as well. The car insurance is the shocker, and I'm just giving our listeners a heads up here. If you're living in the UK and you've insured your insurance or renewed your insurance within the last 6 months and you saw maybe a hike, trust me, when you get your next renewal bill in, you're going to have the surprise of the day. The insurance premiums are going through the roof, Gemma. And of course, you have to add insurance premium tax onto the cost of your premiums. Plus, they're so expensive, you probably have to spread them out over 12 months. Not a lot of people want to write £600, £700, £800 check or pay payment to the insurance company for a year. So they take it out monthly by installments. And then they usually charge you an APR on your installments as well. Talk about getting fleeced at every turn. I mean, where can you go these days that you're not getting fleeced?
Well, quite. I mean, the UK is just, it's relentless in its attack on people with even a tiny bit of money. You know, just going back to Virgin there, you're quite right. It is the RPI plus the charge. So Virgin is going to be 8.8%. That's what you're going to be paying. Whereas other broadband providers are going just sticking with the 3.9 inflation. But still, if your wages aren't going up, it's all very well to say your benefits and pensions are going up, by a measly amount. But if your wages aren't going up, then you're in a tricky position. And that's obviously linked into the fact that Revolution, formerly Vodka Revolution, and all these, you know, big chains, big, massive chains where it used to be packed on a Friday night with young people, that no one's got any money to do these things. And of course, once one chain closes or sells off to protect what little assets it's got left, so others follow suit. And this does seem to be a worrying trend of like, everybody's staying in. Young people aren't having a fun-filled youth, unless you count staring at screens as a fun-filled youth. They're not going out and not spending because there is nothing to spend on because you haven't got anything to spend. But I think that, you know, if you look at those corporations, and they are corporations that I've just listed, there's not one household in the whole of the UK that won't have some kind of contract with one of those, or maybe more of those corporations. And as you say, car tax, water bills, rent, if you pay rent to a social housing company, train fares, if you travel, stamps, if you still use snail mail, everything at every turn is an attack on anyone, a working person with little money they're trying to eke out to have some kind of life. So yeah, one to watch. I wonder what knock-on effect these hikes will have. Will we see people refusing to pay bills, or will we see more, you know, venues like Rocker Revolution just going down the pan and our high streets and city centres becoming something of a ghost town?
Well, I think that's what we are seeing, and I don't see any signs of that reversing. And of course, you make the good point there, Gemma, just to round this one off, that if the minimum wage, for example, is going up, but it's not going up by, say, RPI plus 4%, well, then, of course, it's an increase, but it's not enough of an increase to offset the other increases that are happening. So what gives? People will look at their budget more closely. They will reduce their spending in their city centres, their towns, their local businesses, which is going to put further pressure on them, which is going to lead to even more squeezing. So yeah, it's a grim situation out there, and I'm sorry to say, but it doesn't look like it's going to get any better anytime soon. So be careful with your spending. Don't go crazy. Maybe think twice before that 2-week beach holiday in Mauritius. Not that I'm going on one. I don't even have a passport. I only have one shirt to my name, Gemma. I ain't going to Mauritius anytime soon. So I'm happy enough sitting here looking at my screen, talking to you in the mornings. I'm going nowhere, and I'm saving a fortune in the meantime. So anyway, Gemma, thanks very much for that roundup on the cost of living. Engineered crisis, by the way, and we'll talk again in the next start, no doubt about it. So please stay tuned for more. We've got, let me check. Luke Andreski is going to be joining us. Have to make sure I get the name right in just a minute to talk about ethics. Ethics in the UK and international arena. So we'll get stuck into that in just a minute here on TNT, today's news talk.
TNT's Jason Olborn.
What that sneaky World Health Organization, that private organization linked to the United Nations, is planning to do to take away yours and my medical sovereignty. Or pretending that they're not going to, of course, because it just so happens that they have got the ability to look into a crystal ball, see around corners, and tell us that there is yet another virus or disease or sickness coming for us, and the only way that we survive it is to do exactly what Tedros tells us to do, even though the man's not even a doctor. Can't even tell his own Ethiopian country on 3 separate occasions, goodness me, that they have had a cholera outbreak. Cholera characterized by acute watery diarrhea that, if not diagnosed correctly, can result in death. Well, on 3 occasions, Tedros's answer was, we didn't have good enough testing or testing available, so we didn't really know that it was cholera. That's the guy who's leading the world.
Weekends with Jason Olborn on today's News Talk, TNT.
Military families often sacrifice precious time away from loved ones while serving our country. And for those with children, the separation can be especially difficult.
We were worried that with him leaving, that she would lose those connections with her dad.
Some of life's best moments happen between parents, children, and the pages of a good book. United Through Reading provides that connection.
You can watch your mom or dad read a book to you, and it almost feels like they're really there.
We ensure they remain a consistent, meaningful part of their children's lives, no matter the distance.
Just seeing Jacob recognize Daddy again after a long time just melted my heart.
And now, as we're facing greater isolation from our loved ones, United Through Reading is also available to veterans. Learn more about United Through Reading and download our free secure app at unitedthroughreading.org.
The Net Zero Con will leave millions of citizens dependent on state handouts. It isn't a theory, it's an agenda. There is no climate emergency. On air 24/7. This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Yes, TNT, today's News Talk, and we're just waiting for Luke Andreski to connect with us, just making sure the audio and the visual setup is 100% before we bring him on screen, because that's what we strive for here, excellence and perfection. We don't always achieve it, at least I don't, but the guys are doing their level best to bring Luke on and make sure he's sounding and looking fantastic. Just some comments in the live chat. Nice to be able to dig into them and ask people to come up with two words to describe me. There's some nice ones in there, some not nice ones, but I'm going to read them all out. So Lou describes me as effing legend. I'll take that, Lou. I really like that one. Little Carl says cute and cuddly. I'll take that one as well. Jethro says old and squinty. I'm not so keen on that one, Jethro, but I'll take it. And then Sparrow has a brutal swipe at me. He says, I've been to Africa and I'm going to make sure you know about it. What can I say? I have no defense to that one. To be fair, I only try and bring that into conversations where I can add to a story that the guest is saying or give an example. So yeah, that's pretty much the only place I've been to. I'm not a world traveler or anything like that. So yeah, I have a little bit of knowledge there because I've been quite a few times. But anyway, you know that because I've told you that multiple times. Little Carl also has come up with a moniker, Yob with a Gob. Yob with a Gob. Thanks very much, Carl. I think I preferred cute and cuddly. But anyway, thank you for all your feedback and all the messages that are being left in the live chat. Annie H is in there as well, along with Mark Delaney. He says, gruffly honest. That's you, Rick. I'll take that one as well, Mark. I'll take pretty much anything I can get at this point in time. So we have connection with the one and only Luke Andreski. Luke, welcome back to Locked and Loaded on TNT. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for letting me join you again, Rick. I'm so sorry to have just lost you for a moment then.
No, it's not a problem at all. I was just reading some messages out from our lovely residents or denizens of our live chat on TNTRadio.live. Always a great source of amusement there. But we've connected with you anyway. I've told people before you came on, look, you are an author and also of intelligent ethics and ethical intelligence, two separate works, and you're the co-founder of ethicalrenewal.org as well. So we're going to talk a little bit about ethics, and there's one story that I picked up on last night because I was thinking about this theme for us. And there's been a terror attack in Moscow over the last few days, a terrible loss of life there. And the suspects have also gotten quite a lot of airtime since then. There's at least four men more at this point in time that have been captured and paraded before the world's media. Let's just say they're not looking too hot at the minute. One of them, apparently his eye fell out as he was being arrested. The other guy is missing an ear, and apparently he was fed that ear and made to eat it. Some other guy's lying on the ground with his trousers removed and electrical wires attached to his nether regions. And the other guys are in wheelchairs wheeled into the court. Now, what I'm going to get to is, of course, those are guys, if those guys committed terror attacks and they killed 100 plus Russians, of course, people are going to be angry. People are going to be hugely angry, especially when they get their hands on people like that. But they're almost being paraded out there with, you know, stuff it. This is what we do to people that attack us. And a lot of people are behind that. They're saying, well, yeah, they got what they deserve. They're killers. They're murderers. Other people are saying, you shouldn't be treating people like that. They haven't even had a trial. What do you make of this so far, this media circus around the parading of the alleged suspects of this terror attack?
I think the crucial word is alleged there, isn't it? So there's been no trial, there's been no due process. We don't know for sure that these are, in fact, the perpetrators. So to treat them in that way before establishing those facts very clearly is obviously abominable. It's not moral, it's not decent. And even if they are the correct suspects, you aren't going to establish that through torture. It's well known that by torturing people, people become very quickly willing to say anything. I mean, you know, stick an electrode on either me or you, and we'd, you know, tell them that we're the Queen of China or something, you know. So it's absolute nonsense. It's a stupid way to behave. It's counterproductive. And it's also quite clearly immoral.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing is too, when these images are put out there, you know, we've seen images in the past of, Americans, what they're doing in Guantanamo Bay, people are condemning that. They don't exactly want that stuff to be publicized, but it's out there in the public knowledge, attracts a lot of negative attention. This is not exactly doing the Russian PR machine much good when you see people that have been treated in this way. And as you know, listen, they may or may not be guilty. You know, we're not in that position. We don't know the exact facts at the minute. But I think it's quite interesting the way that this is being done as a parade on national TV at the minute. And of course, we're discussing it here this morning. Just from an ethical point of view, obviously, you can agree or disagree with us. What do you think? Did the Russians go too far? Have they not went far enough? What if they've got the wrong guys? And the other thing is they don't have a great future ahead of them by the look of it. I would say those guys just want the ground to open up and swallow them up fast rather than remain at the mercy of their captors. What would you feel if you were in that position? Would you just not want to say, listen, if you're going to do me in, just do it now. And enough with the electrodes.
That's the whole point about torture, isn't it? That people will beg, they will say anything in order to help make it end. And they would rather die. So, you know, they'll say something that might get them executed. I think it's part of a kind of a hawkishness and a advertising of the fact that you're a bully or that you're a strong man that we're seeing here. So we actually see it in the whole thing going on in Israel at the moment. You know, they're saying, you don't mess with us. You mess with us and we will do whatever whatever abominable crime it takes to punish you. So it's about punishment, it's about revenge, it's not about morality, and it's not about facts. Mm-hmm. And it's also, as you implied there, it's also saying, look at me, I'm actually parading this. We are the sort of threat, the sort of people that you don't mess with. Now, the problem with that is actually it doesn't do what it thinks it does, because these things never stop. You know, you never stop terrorism just by torturing a few terrorists, because there's a whole background and history that's driving that terrorism. You know, there are reasons for it. It's not just this one person deciding on, you know, as they got out of bed that morning, oh yeah, I'm just going to go and blow somewhere up. There's a whole long history and set of circumstances that drive towards a terrorist attack. You don't stop it by pretending to be a strongman.
You don't. And of course, you know, this don't mess with us approach obviously is part of the equation too. When you think about the executions that are carried out in places like Saudi, they're done in a public arena. They're sending out a message, you don't mess with us, or what's happening in Gaza at the minute, also very much along those same lines. Now, we've got to take a brief headline break. When we come back at the other side, I want to look at another setup here, the so-called engineered famine that's going on at the minute in Gaza, as if the displacement wasn't bad enough and mass murder that's happening over there isn't bad enough. Now there's an alleged engineered genocide, and I'm saying alleged because I'm going to present what the facts we know is, and then we can discuss that to say, well, do they have a point, or are they just trying to dress something up and make it into something that it's actually not? So we'll look at that when we come back on the other side, along with Luke here on TNT. Leave your thoughts, comments and opinions in the live chat, and we'll be right back. Don't go away.
News doesn't stop breaking, and we don't take a break from covering it.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with your TNT headlines. Russian President Vladimir Putin says Friday's terrorist attack in Moscow was carried out by radical Islamists, but he says he's more interested in finding out who gave them the order. The divide between the US and Israel is deepening after Washington refused to block a UN Security Council resolution calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. And farmers have rolled up to London in their tractors protesting against ludicrous climate policies, which they say are hurting their bottom lines.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah, 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth, from government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Okay, talking this morning with Luke Andreski. Luke is an author of both the books Ethical Intelligence and Intelligent Ethics, and he's the co-founder of Ethical Renewal. You can follow them on X or Twitter at Ethical Renewal, or check out the website ethicalintelligence.org. Another story that I want to look up with you this morning, Luke, is this is a story that's appeared in the UK media this week. The headline reads, "We are about to witness in Gaza the most intense famine since the Second World War. Gaza's health crisis has its own dreadful momentum, even if the shooting ends today. Okay, so let's assume we get the ceasefire that everybody's calling for. That's a huge win. But then again, what else are you dealing with here? It's not just about people being shot. So even if the shooting ends today and the aid trucks begin to roll, the dying will still continue for some time. So it's the most intense starvation catastrophe of recent decades. The death toll from hunger and disease may soon surpass the body count from bombs and bullets. So it's a twofold horror here. You've got physical attack, and then you have disease and hunger mixed in on top of that. And of course, nobody can defend the killing of innocent people, wherever they are in the world, for any reason whatsoever. But a couple of guests that have had on over the last week are talking about aid. Aid is being restricted coming into Israel at the minute. Aid trucks are piling up at the border and being prevented from entering, while people are starving at the other side and dying. And set aside politics and set aside anything else, if you're withholding aid from children and people that are bombed out of their homes, no matter where they are in the world, how is that justifiable in any way, shape or form?
Well, there's no question that Israel, the Israeli state and the IDF have stepped outside the bounds of morality. There's no ethical justification for the actions of the last 120 odd days. This is just a perfect example of how simple the moral question is. People say, oh, it's complicated. You've got to think about the history of Israel and all this sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. There's nothing complicated about starving children, about it's not just engineered starvation, it's engineered disease, as you're saying, and it's cutting back the supplies of clean water. And in your quote, you mentioned, when the ceasefire starts, the aid convoy can start rolling in. Well, that's not going to happen either, because there'll still be the checks and there'll still be the entirely disrupted infrastructure. You know, can these trucks get to the right places, given the state of the roads, the buildings smashed down everywhere? And the end of the ceasefire is coming too late. They're talking about a ceasefire for Ramadan, and we're halfway through Ramadan. So you can see, as soon as you look at any of the news about the conflicts in Gaza at this moment, that Israel has no concern at all for the morality of the issue. They've shredded their moral credentials. As you said, when a single child is killed, you begin to shred your moral credentials. So you have to say, if morality and human rights and getting on together isn't their purpose, then what is their purpose? What are they aiming at? And I was just put it right in the list this morning. And it's not about eliminating Hamas, because they are a recruiting sergeant. All these actions are a recruiting sergeant for Hamas. It's not about living together peacefully in the future. You're not going to live together peacefully with a whole generation who will now hate you because of your actions. So it's not about the one state solution where they all live in harmony. It's not about a two state solution, because they're gradually taking back whatever little area the Palestinians had in the West Bank and now in Gaza. So what is it all for? And it's all for a deeply immoral enterprise, which is ethnic cleansing. And the people they can't ethnically cleanse, i.e. push out or force to leave the territory, they're quite happy to see die from starvation, bombing or hunger or disease.
You know, from an ethical point of view too, you would think that the international community would be moving heaven and earth to do something about this. And what it sits oddly against is a backdrop of the last 2 years, where we have seen floods of people coming into the UK and Ireland, for example, claiming asylum, fleeing from war in Ukraine, parts of Ukraine, running to the UK, running to France, running away from persecution, but also people coming in from areas like Albania and, you know, Georgia, different places around the world where they're not exactly under threat, and it seems to be predominantly men. That's a fact. That's what we're seeing, people crossing the channel in dinghies. Where's the Palestinian refugees? Why are they not being given priority? If you're going to take anyone in from anywhere at this point in time, I would think you would put a hold in saying, okay, we know you're running from Algeria, we know you're running from Somalia and Nigeria, but these people are A, homeless, B, have no medical supplies, and C, starving to death, and D, they are women and children. Where's the dinghy fools for the aid flights or the repatriation flights for the Palestinians? I don't see the Palestinians flooding into the UK and Ireland. Why not?
Well, there's two reasons there. One is that so far Israel isn't letting anybody leave. So between Israel and Egypt, there's simply no exodus route. for Palestinians. And the second is our hypocritical government doesn't want them. You know, we were happy to extend homes for Ukrainians, you know, all sorts of subsidies and offers to allow Ukrainians to come here. Nice people who look pretty much like us. But as soon as you talk about Palestinians or people of an Arabic origin, actually, it's a very different story. So I think there's a strong element of racism in that. That's one reason we're not encouraging or accepting or offering shelter for Palestinians.
It's so bizarre when that just jogged my memory about the, you know, open your home, take in a Ukrainian refugee. The government was even offering to pay you money to do that. But now I don't see any homes for the Palestinian starving being thrown out there or incentives being given from the government to do that. And just one last thing, because we're out of time here. Again, we don't have time to answer this, but I'm surprised, you know, if the UN or NATO claim to care as much as they do about protecting life and getting aid. Like, you look at the efforts and the billions that have been pumped into Ukraine because of people that are, mostly actually it's been weapons that have been sent out there to help kill people. But look at the aid that's been whipped up for there. I'm surprised that NATO and the UN doesn't just strong arm their way in to say, we don't care if you have closed your borders. We don't care. There's tens of thousands of people, actually million people plus, are in danger of starving to death. So stuff your resolution. We're going in to help people, and there's no justifiable reason why you shouldn't stop us. Do you think we're going to get to that point this year, or are we going to just hear more fluffy rhetoric from our politicians as to why they aren't intervening directly?
It's going to be more rhetoric. It's going to be more hypocrisy. NATO, the contrast between Ukraine and Gaza has shredded NATO's credibility. They don't care about human rights. They don't care about people suffering. They don't care about sovereignty. They're leaving the Gazas to be abused and terrorized by a neighboring state, an occupying power, in fact. So the Western order has shredded its own credibility. It's a great tragedy.
It is an interesting to talk about this with you, Luke, just from this ethical point of view this morning, because we're obviously aware of what's going on in terms of the physicality of the atrocities over there. But shining a spotlight on government hypocrisy is never a bad thing to do. So appreciate you coming on this morning to do just that. That's Luke Andreski. And hopefully we'll talk again sooner rather than later. So we've got to take a little break right now, and then we're going to welcome TNT's very own political editor, Basil Valentine, to take the stage and say his piece here on TNT Today's News Talk.
While serving in Vietnam, a grenade took my ability to see. Today, I'm a sculptor creating new visions. Now, my fingers are my eyes. As a veteran, I know the challenges of life can be great. In my art, turning a lump of clay into something beautiful, that means a lot to me. Life is like that. We each must use what we can to make things better.
DAV helps veterans like Michael get the benefits they've earned. They help more than 1 million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
Now, I show others how they can create something with their own hands. With support from DAV, more veterans can shape their lives into a thing of beauty. My victory is bringing beauty into the world.
Michael Naranjo, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
My character Shazam knows all about growing up in a family full of teenage superheroes. They're bold.
Where's everyone going?
To fight crime.
Okay. Adventurous. Shazam! There's never a dull moment. And no matter what happens, they'll always have your back. All they need is a place to grow and be themselves. And the best part is, you don't have to be a superhero to adopt a teen. Learn more about adopting a teen from foster care. Visit AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward.
In a secret lab, somewhere in the Western Hemisphere, the perfect human specimen has been born. He has the strength of 10 men. And the wisdom of 20.
Rick Munn.
Now you listen here. He's a very naughty boy.
TNT Radio.
Now go away.
Yes, this is TNT Locked and Loaded. I'm going to be joined, well, I am joined right now by our political editor, Basil Valentine. Basil, I don't know if you caught the tail end of that conversation I was having with Luke Andreski. I posed a question from an ethical point of view. We're seeing the UK and Ireland flooded with people coming in from Ukraine, coming in from Albania, coming in from all over the place. We're not seeing the UK flooded with people that are starving to death in Palestine. I'm just, the question was posed, why not? And I just want to pick up, I want to get your input on this one, by the way, before we go into our other topics, but a few comments in the live chat. Thank you very much, by the way, excuse me, everybody, for your messages in the live chat. Nice to know that you're listening. Jack Guzzler Cliffy, he says, there are lots of places in the UK that are dominated by people who don't look like us. What happened there? Yes, point taken in that one, but I'm talking about literal starving children and starving women that need to be kept alive, basically. And my point was that if we can open our borders and flood the UK and Ireland, excuse me, with Ukrainian refugees, some of which are coming from areas of Ukraine that aren't even threatened by any violence, or Albanians for that matter, my point is that there are actual people in the world out there that are actually starving to death and under actual threat of death. Why can't we bring them in? Jethro said the neighbouring countries don't want Palestinian refugees. The last time they took them in, the PLO ran riot throughout all of their countries, causing destruction. Look at Lebanon. Again, I'm talking about kids. I'm talking about kids and people that are emaciated and people that are literally on their last legs here, keeping them alive. And I don't mean dinghy fools of young men who can be radicalized or are radicalized that are coming into the country to cause any destruction. So I take your point on that one. Stunt Monkey said, Rick, missing the point. These wars are constructed to wreck Western society, flooding us with imports. We need humanity to happen where these people live, not keep importing all the world's problems. And listen, again, I hear what you're saying there too, but it's just, that hasn't worked either. We have tried intervention in places where this is happening and it just isn't working there. There's so much endemic corruption in there. All I'm saying is brushing all that aside, if there's someone who's in genuine need, and you can actually help them without sacrificing other people that are in need in the area that you live in, I think we should do it. And our government has demonstrated they obviously have a capacity to do that, Basil, with the amount of Ukrainians that have been brought in, or the amount of people that they're talking about repatriating down to Rwanda. It's a real mess, this, isn't it, on so many levels.
Well, planet's a mess, Rick. But with regard to the Palestinians, the very simple answer as to why they're not coming here to be fed and housed is they can't get out. There is no port in Gaza. Mm-hmm. There is no airport. The crossings are all blocked. I'm sure they would all much rather, or certainly a lot of them, would much rather go anywhere in the world where they can at least eat. But there is no such opportunity. On top of that, of course, any mass evacuation of Palestinians from their homeland is ethnic cleansing, which is a war crime. Newspapers are full of stories this morning about Israelis already planning on building their beachfront homes, literally on the bones and skeletons of Palestinians who have been murdered. So in the first instance, they can't get out. Secondly, even if they could, if they were to evacuate in any number, that's a war crime, plain and simple. So
what a hell, Basil, what an absolute hell. Yeah. And actually that was one of the points that I made to Luke, you know, if NATO or the UN genuinely give a damn about these people, the way they claim to give a damn about refugees or internally displaced people, they would say, you know what, to hell with restrictions, to hell with a closed border. We're going to strong arm our way in there and we're going to help those people, a little bit like, you know, going into a burning building to save someone that you love and care about. Okay, it may not seem like a good idea. You may be breaking protocol and risking your own life, but if you have a genuine care for humanity, and this isn't just about the fact that it's Israel, this could be any conflict in any part of the world, just on a human level, on a humanitarian level. If people are starving to death and you can't do something to alleviate that suffering, something should be done about it. Otherwise, it's all just rhetoric and hypocrisy coming from the mouths of our so-called leaders at this point in time. It's just an unholy mess, Basil, is the only way I can use to summarize what's happening over there at the minute.
Yeah, that's about the size of it, Rick. And it's we can only hope that there is a ceasefire, but the Israelis showed no signs whatsoever of implementing one or abiding by the resolution. In fact, they're just angry at the United States for having withdrawn their diplomatic cover. But I want to move on to politics here in the UK, which promises further embarrassment for the Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak. Another by-election looms, this time Tory MP Scott Benton is quitting his Blackpool South constituency, which was created after the Second World War and held by the Conservatives until 1997, when it was one of the New Labour Blair victories. It was then held by Labour until the last election, so it survived the Cameron era. And at the last election, Scott Benton won this sort of semi-red wall, pink wall perhaps, seat. But he is resigning following a corruption scandal, his role in a lobbying business. Now, this, of course, represents another opportunity up there in the northwest of England for the various independents, the Workers' Party of Great Britain, etc. Another litmus test as well for Keir Starmer, because any, you know, prospective Labour government would expect to take a marginal seat like this in a landslide. But I have a feeling that it might be another shock and another bloody nose for both the major parties. I certainly hope so, Rick. And that's where my money will be heading as soon as we see the full list of candidates and the odds being offered.
There's such a seismic shift going on at the minute, Basil. I mean, like, we're covering this more or less on a daily basis here, what's happening UK politically. Obviously in Ireland, the exact same thing's happening too. Massive swell of independents running against the major parties getting their noses bloodied in spectacular fashions. We saw it at the referendum that happened 2 to 3 weeks ago in Ireland, where the government was absolutely decimated with the no vote, and the people spoke loud and clear. People are on the streets everywhere in Ireland. Nobody's happy with the way the politicians are going. And the same, I think, very much can be said with England. It's hard to call it. I mean, I would say there's not a snowball's chance in hell that the Tories win the next election. Obviously, the smart money, or at least the odds are highly stacked in Labour's favour. But there's this swell starting. The momentum has started with the independent parties, the Workers' Party of Great Britain, which, of course, you referenced there. We can't rule out them doing some crazy swell in the next set of elections, or other independent candidates too. It's pretty much there for the taking.
Absolutely, Rick. I've been following British general elections since the spring of 1974. And we had some interruptions to the two-party duopoly in the early 1980s, when it looked, before the invasion of the Falklands Islands, as if the SDP Liberal Alliance, as it was then led by David Steele and David Owen, the two Davids, I don't know if you remember that, they were winning all the by-elections by huge margins, and the Falklands War effectively saved the Thatcher premiership. You know, the tremendous sort of swell of patriotism and all the rest of it. And so Thatcher stayed in power. Then, of course, the only alternative to her was the idiotic Neil Kinnock. People didn't, you know, he was derided, of course, as most Labour leaders are, by the popular press, as the Welsh windbag. He contrived to lose two elections, the second of which in 92 saw John Major elected. Then, of course, finally, Labour got their chance in 1997. But, you know, this feels very different from any election period that I can remember since 1974. The dissatisfaction with the major parties, which is a sort of perfect storm, really. Gemma was talking about the cost of living crisis at the top of the programme. So people feel that economically they are no better off than they were 5, 10 or even 20 years ago. And that's always crucial when it comes to either re-electing an incumbent government or somebody who promises sort of broadly more of the same, which Labour do. If people are no better off financially, then they're going to start looking for alternatives. People often talk about circumstances like the present situation leading to the rise of fascism, the dreaded extremism, whatever that's supposed to mean these days, Rick. So, yeah, I think we're in for some big shocks. And the longer the election is delayed, the better organized the smaller parties will be. That includes Reform. It will be very interesting to see how they do in this Conservative seat in Blackpool, with, you know, more and more defections of MPs. More MPs are expected to defect to Reform in the coming weeks, particularly from the right of the Conservative Party following Lee Anderson's lead. And of course, we've seen councillors defecting to Workers GB, as well as a huge groundswell of support for them. So, yeah, I look forward to this election. It should be in about 6 weeks' time, this next litmus test, because, of course, these constituencies, they can't. The government would love to kick this by-election into the long grass till the autumn, but they can't, because the people of Blackpool South are legally entitled to be represented in Parliament. So they have to move the writ for a by-election within the next week or two.
This business of the general election, I believe it's the latest. The latest that that can happen is January of 2025. And I mean, like, we've talked about the odds. The odds of the Tories winning again are zero to nothing. So the question I have is, you know, putting it out to you, get your opinion on this one, is why, I don't know, why, you know, it prolonged the inevitable. They're going to get crushed. They're going to get defeated. What do they have to gain by drawing this out potentially for another 3, 4, 5 months? People were last year predicting it's going to happen in April, possibly May. It doesn't look like that's going to happen now. They're kicking the can on down the road. They're not going to win. Or do they believe that they can possibly come up with some crazy strategy, field some candidate that could be the next Tory Prime Minister? What do you think? What's going on in the minds of the Tory playmakers at the minute?
Well, there were whispers a week or two ago that the knives were out for Rishi Sunak. He is particularly unpopular. He's well underwater in terms of his personal favourability ratings. And quite rightly so. I was sort of mildly impressed by him, to be open, if I'm being perfectly honest, in the early days of the COVID farrago. But I think he's absolutely abysmal now. So change of leader is one option. Some are saying it's too late for that. But he's certainly an anchor on their electoral prospects. We've got things at the moment like the security threat coming from China. Gillian Keegan, the education secretary, has said today that China is obviously a security threat, and further sort of cyber sanctions are being planned against the Chinese. The reason I mention that is because, as I referred earlier to the Falkland Islands war, of course, that was a big shooting war with Argentina. But generally, in terms of national security, the Conservative Party is generally favoured by voters. So if there was some kind of national security threat between now and the autumn, that could see people rallying behind the Conservative Party, which is, after all, the most successful political organisation in the world over the last 300 years. That might be why the Labour Party these days has been keen to ditch its traditional association with the colour red and the rose. And instead, these days, you see Labour Party representatives, particularly Keir Starmer himself, standing in front of Union Jacks so that people associate the Labour Party with patriotism. And given the general tendency these days to ramp up fears about national security, whether real or imagined, Labour want to be considered the patriotic party to which people can cling in a national emergency, because it's really only either a national emergency or some major scandal engulfing the Labour Party, or the unlikely prospect of a huge economic recovery in the next 6 months that can save the Conservative Party in the next election.
You know, you mentioned their success, in inverted commas, over the last 300 years. You know, I'm thinking about when the brand is tarnished irreparably, it's hard to come back from it. And I don't know if you can remember an insurance company that was the darling of the wealthy in the UK, the Equitable Life Assurance Company. I'm sure you can remember them. They were the cream of the crop. All the judiciary used to put their pension funds in there. All the wealthy and the self-employed used to pump money in there because they were providing great returns, great service, first-class advice for a long time. And then they had a whole pension debacle that happened about 10 or 15 years ago. I can remember I worked in financial services at the time, and Halifax HBOS bought over the Equitable Life pension book and tried to salvage whatever was left. They were never making a comeback from that. And actually, when I see the Tory party and you talk about their, you know, hundreds of years old, you know, their heritage, I think their brand's so badly damaged at this point in time, I don't think there's going to be any comeback there. To me, the Equitable Life of British politics.
Yep, you might be right, but, you know, having said that,
never say never.
They proved people wrong in the past. You know, nobody expected John Major to win in 92, and he did. Very quickly, going across the water to your island, Rick, I see that Sinn Féin are now calling for the hate speech legislation to be scrapped.
Yes.
The spokesman on Justice Pardaily is calling on, well, what will be the new Taoiseach? Stephen Harris, isn't it?
Simon Harris.
Simon Harris, to drop this hate speech bill.
Yeah, interesting flip-flopping going on here by Sinn Féin. They obviously backed the government in the two yes vote referendum, vote yes to get rid of mother from the constitution, vote yes to replace the word family with durable relationship. They made a boo-boo with that. They destroyed their reputation by backing the government in that when they should have been in opposition. And now they backed the hate speech bill coming in. Now they're flip-flopping on it because they realise it could be another nail in the coffin of their political aspirations over in Ireland. So interesting to see them trying to play the field here. I think, again, so much damage has been done to their reputation, Basil, in the last few years. It's going to be hard for them to claw that one back as well. So that's us done.
We should welcome this, Rick. Nevertheless, we should welcome it. Do you know what
I mean? We welcome it. We welcome it.
To their senses. Better late than never.
It's a sign. It's a sign of the times, as old Prince once sang before he popped his clogs. But Basil, it's been an absolute blast talking to you. We've got to get off now, take a little headline break, and I'll be back at the other side with Phil Zimmerman and also Stephen Kelly. Don't go away. Stay tuned for more on TNT.